Hey, you dorks, this is Gunnar Hansen, Leatherface from the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, and you are listening to The Dorkening.
So as you all know, this is Amy Steele's panel.
Welcome.
Most of you know her. Most of you know her from playing Ginny in Friday the 13th, Part 2.
And from this weekend.
And from this weekend, definitely. So I guess I will kick this question off with, you've had an extensive career in both film and TV. Which do you prefer doing? Do you like one more than the other?
Well, let's see. To do film is like very, you know, it's a status. It's really great. You just hope it's going to be a blockbuster and things like that. But when it comes down to just fun doing the work, which is what I really like to do, is three-camera comic sitcoms. Oh, my God, there was so much fun because you got to rehearse for the whole week and make jokes and laugh your ass off. And then Friday, you get an audience. So that is like the best job. But I know that's not your genre. I get that. But as far as an acting point of view, is really a joy. Film is great, but it's slow moving. But I haven't been in the business for a long time, and now there's digital, and now everyone's shooting with 14 cameras around. You can do as many takes. I was at a time where three was tops, you know, because we had film. And it's slow going, and you better get it right. Technically, like, you have to hit this spot. Like, if this were the microphone and the camera was right there, obviously it is, it would have to be here. And if I ducked here, they might have to start all over, and I would be having fucked it up. So if the technical part's okay, if it's a cameraman's fault, it's like, they're fine. Actually, the cameraman probably felt bad too, but I was glad it just wasn't my fault. So in film, when I did it, you just had to really make sure that you were right on. So it's like, oh, wait, and I have to act too? So it's like.
In Friday the 13th, was there ever a time where you got hurt due to, like, some small mistake that could have stopped things?
Well, Steve Dash will tell you. These are Ouija board glasses, everybody. Oh, those are amazing. Okay, let's see. Well, Steve Dash, I'm sure you guys all know that the story with him is that my timing was way off. I tried to do some stunts, and I brought down the machete and put the machete through his finger after I put the sweater on.
Oh, wow.
Ouch. Uh-huh.
Oh, dear.
It was really, it's when I say, it's all done, Jason. So that part, but I didn't get hurt. I got hurt, like, emotionally. I felt, oh, my God, I ruined it. And Steve Miner, the director, said, don't worry. They love that stuff. Those stunt people, they love those scars. They love getting beat up. And I'm like, ah! But there was one point when I'm jumping out the window, and somebody had said, hey, you know, Amy, because we didn't get paid hardly anything on that film. You know, if you did your own stunts, you could probably get a stunt adjustment. I thought, oh, that's cool. $125. Let me put myself at risk. As an actor, your adrenaline is going so much that that's why they have stunt people, so that they can think about that kind of thing. As an actor, it's like I tried to do both, and it does not work. That's why they have professionals for both things. So jumping out that window, I basically threw my body out the window. And then I said, well, what about a stunt adjustment? The director was like, you're not going to get a stunt adjustment.
Did you have to do it more than once to get the shot that they wanted?
I can't remember. Maybe I was just unconscious. I have no idea.
Amy, did you cut his finger that they actually had real sharp machetes, and it wasn't like a dull machete
yes.
that you were working with?
Debbie,
there was an actual machete?
That's a really good question, because after it happened, it was a real machete. I mean, I'm not saying it had just been sharpened. But it was a real machete, and somebody said to me, like, I can't believe they don't have a prop machete. And I went, Yeah, why don't they have a proper Chevy?
Yeah, really.
Somebody should have never said that to me. But
they should have had a like one with a dull point, you know.
They should have had a rubber one. But so yeah, that happened. And also, as Steve Dash tells it, that you know he's supposed to jump out of the woods after I run by, but I ran too fast, so he tried to jump, and he's supposed to hit a mattress. Well, you know, my timing was all off, and then at one point I'm supposed to kick on three. Well, I kick on two, you know, and so I kicked him in the nut. I kicked him, you know, in the ribs. She broke my ribs. She punctured my finger, and it's probably all true. So,
he must not be very fond of you.
He's just a baby. Wah, wah, wah. Steve Dash, tell him I said so.
Okay. He'll know. This is all being videoed. So, while doing my research, I read that you serve as a marriage and family therapist and you have a private practice.
Oh, yeah.
So, how do you balance that with the acting? Do you do one more than the other now, or...?
I'm not acting right now, except as a human being, right now in this moment. I really have a private practice. I'm a counselor, marriage and family therapist, and I do EMDR, and for a while there I worked with horses and people.
Oh, wow.
But so, yeah, I'm not pursuing my acting career. You know, Hollywood loves, like, when you're 22, and...
You're still pretty.
Well, thanks. Debbie, thank you. But, yeah, it's just, you know what? I think that, let's see how I can say this. You know, you reach a certain point in Hollywood where there's like a fork in the road, and I realize I valued other things that maybe Hollywood doesn't really value or they don't support. So that's being very PC about it. but I mean there's great things. I don't want to just trash all Hollywood, because more power to people being an actor. And right now I don't know how you would do it, because
there's so many allegations, like with the sexual, you know.
Well, not that part. I think that part's unto itself is like the worst. But it was more like, I can't imagine now doing it, and like, you can't even get an agent unless you have 2,500 followers on Instagram or something like that. I mean, they won't listen to your music until YouTube has been viewed 10 billion times. It's just not my thing. So I don't know if I would be successful today. So I'm really grateful for way back when.
Yes, Debbie.
Amy, the what you're saying about, you know, Hollywood has, you know that you had different values than Hollywood. What you're saying about your family counselor and a marriage counselor and stuff, would it be like something that's like Hollywood tends to like the, you know, stigmatization of the mental illness and stuff like that?
No, I think that what it is there's a... I used to think of it this way, and I'm not sure if I still do or not, but, like, Hollywood wants 100% devotion. At all times, like, I used to say, they want my blood.
They want to own you.
Yeah, and I just am not one of those... really, really, really passionate actors. I love having a great time and having new experiences and being challenged and being scared, whether it be just in an audition, and being hopeful. And also, I love novelty. Does anyone here know about the Enneagram?
The what?
Okay, well, it's okay. But anyway, I'm a novelty whore, actually. I love new... I love like new stuff and new experiences, and wow, that sounds cool. And I love that about my job. I don't love the repetitive, the redundancy of like getting a script, looking at the script, going in, do they like me? Am I going to be picked? That got to be really old. And also, you know, you have to drive a lot in LA. There's no parking spaces anywhere. So I got a little lazy with that. But it's almost like if it's not, another thing I like, and I say this to clients, so I have to kind of walk the talk, but if your life is like going, like you're in the river, you know, and you're going with the flow, everything happens and it's like way cool. If you're swimming upstream and you're getting thrown out onto the shore and you're hungry and thirsty and tired and exhausted, like something's up. Mm. Instead of keep going against the stream, just get back in the river, go with the flow and see where it brings you. And so it didn't really bring me to the casting couch.
Well, that makes sense.
Yeah, so it's more like that. A little existential piece, which I think is important.
Cool.
Me?
Yeah.
I heard this, like, I could be completely wrong about this, but the scene where you have to, like, swing the machete in slow motion, there was something that you couldn't take it seriously or something because of the sound the camera made or something?
Well, that was when Jason comes through the window.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, the iconic moment. It's horrible to shoot, but it's the kind of thing where we had to shoot it three times on three different, so like I think once a week for like 3 weeks. And it was really, really, really stressful because if I said to all you guys right now, in 10 seconds, somebody's going to walk through that door and scare the shit out of you, you would all go, and then if I go 9, 8, 7, 6, you would all start, your blood would start to pump. Your adrenaline would start pumping, even if I told you. Same thing. I have the pitchfork, right? I'm looking at the door, waiting for that to come in. And I know that glass is going to break behind me. This guy, Warrington Gillette, is in this sling, and he's going to be flung through the window behind me. But I'm supposed to look at the door like this, going, and then all of a sudden, there's a high-speed camera. They go roll, and it goes, and it's so loud, this high-speed camera. And I'm like this, going, fuck, I know it's going to be behind me. I'm such an idiot right now. So it was that. That's what the moment is. Okay. And then basically I had to do it 2 more times.
Everyone thinks because you're a zombie, you don't know good coffee. Well, they're wrong. We have very active lifestyles. It's not all wandering the countryside aimlessly or scaring passing motorists. And we all love a good cup of joe. And there's only one brew that gets my seal of approval. Deadly Grounds coffee is my guilty pleasure. Bold, robust, delicious. It's coffee that can wake the dead. With over a dozen different roasts and flavors, Deadly Grounds can satisfy the most finicky of coffee addicts. The aroma is so intoxicating. It brings all of my neighbors out of the woodwork. Deadly Grounds Coffee. Coffee to die for and zombie approved. It's good to get a little deadly.
Use the front door!
Oh, they're so disgusting.
It's kind of torture.
Does anybody else have any questions for Amy?
When you were first hired as Jeannie for Friday the 13th, did they tell you you were going to be the hero at the end of the movie, or did they?
No, it's in the script.
Right.
They give you the script, and I actually don't really remember reading all the script, but I know I did, but I don't remember going, oh my God, I'm the hero. I don't remember that.
They made such a difference in the culture moving forward with horror films. There was never a female heroine before.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden,
they got
that was
smart.
You.
Right. They were way ahead of their time. Yeah, so, yeah, I feel so grateful and honored and the whole bit to be Jeannie. I mean, thank you, Jeannie.
A lot of people consider you a cult icon, so how do you feel about having that status?
Well, truly, it's an honor because, seriously, I am just a person just like all you guys. You know, somebody said this weekend, yeah, guess what, they all put on pants, same way we do. It's really true. I am just a person, but I am really, really lucky to have been plucked to have this opportunity that everybody gets to see. I mean, all you guys have jobs, you go to work, you're appreciated, you get to see your staff and the people that love you and the people that, you know, your friends. But you have, like, say, 100, you hit 100 or whatever. I got to hit so many more people. That's the only difference. I mean, so your 100 is still 100%. It's just concentrated different. So I have more people, but it still equals 100%.
Does anybody else have a question?
I have a question. It seems like even with friends I have that maybe don't follow the series all that much, your character is still like one of the lead, the final girls that everyone kind of remembers, even if they're just sort of more casual viewers. And I was just wondering if there's any reason that you think Ginny, among some of the women of the series, is like one that seems to stand out to people so much.
Well, it's a little obvious. And I don't mean, I'm not talking down to you, but Ginny wasn't prancing around in tight shorts.
Yeah.
You know, those people kind of get, you know,
they're the first ones to go.
Yeah, and you can't, they all kind of like blend in. And plus, you know, you have the script and they get some hot girl to walk in and they go, oh, here, you be this girl. You know, so you're typecast a little bit, but they kind of blend in. And Ginny, all of a sudden, was kind of badass. She actually drove. Woohoo! You know, she actually told her boyfriend, like, bullshit. You know, so she had a say, and she didn't follow the crowd. She said, no, wait, hold on. Even though she was a little drunk, she said, what if there really is a Jason? Like, she was curious. And again, curiosity, I think, can, like, take you forever. So I think that's what Ginny gave and is. But it's a good question. Sort of.
Yes, darling.
When you said before about the Jason coming through the window behind you, and you knew that the glass was gonna break behind you and stuff. Were you afraid of being cut, or did they use real glass, or did they use like sometimes people they use like spun sugar for glass? The way it was.
It's it was like a plastic glass that breaks, and then all the wood was balsa wood, so it wasn't like glass.
Yeah, so you weren't worried that you were gonna get cut or anything.
No. But it took a while to like clean it all up and reset it, you know. But yeah, I wasn't really worried about that. I didn't want to get banged in the back of the head, but they kind of set it up. You know, I felt really well taken care of. You know, they really set it up so that I didn't have that fear. I could do my own thing knowing that somebody was going to take care of me.
That's good.
What's your favorite member of the series?
Come up here. Come up here. Okay, does everybody know this guy's secret?
Yeah.
Everybody see that?
Wow. Let me get a picture of it to show this to my fiance. Let me zoom on you.
That's awesome.
Is that so amazing?
I gotta have to zoom on.
So he asked me what my favorite number in the series is. There's only one.
I didn't get it the first time.
But you know, honestly, I'm gonna be really honest. I didn't see it past 3 because I am scared to death of horror films.
Wow.
I am really, really scared. I'm trying to get through Stranger Things.
That's not that bad.
Yeah, that's what all you guys say. Like, I can't go to sleep for like 3 hours after. So I'm a wimp for any film. Like I'd rather go to the movie theater and watch it at home because it takes me so long to come down off of watching even the drama. Isn't that so sad?
Do you have anything that
I
you
can
do
relate to
prep for a role to get in the right frame of mind?
I guess I just get motivated, and I hope that I do a good job. I hope they like me. I don't know. I hope I just work hard and try. I'm not a real method person, so. But then, like for Walk Like a Man, I went to. I loved it. So this is my problem. So I get a role, and I like. Oh, I have to research it, right? So for Walk Like a Man, I went to the Montana wilderness and hooked up with this girl who follows wolves.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Wow.
Brings wolves down into the lower 48. And I was like, yeah, I'm on research. And it was in the dead of winter. It was the best. And then for Love and Honor, a TV show I did, I got off flight and I went to Austin. And like, and this was like way back when, so like I got to like hang out in Austin. I went dancing in Austin. Yeah, I'm here for research. And yeah, so that kind of stuff. I guess that's how I prepare. Does that count?
It counts to me.
Get on a plane and go hang with those people. So yeah.
Does anybody else have a question they like?
I guess at what point did you realize that the films were going to be this seriously, like, cultural icon, and what was your reaction to being focus of that?
Yeah, okay, so I will tell you, I had no idea until I went to, I think, Schiller Theater in New Jersey. It must have been, I'm gonna say, 10 years ago, and somebody said, maybe a little more than 10. Usually at my age, I have to double everything, but it wasn't, it was maybe, so let's just say 15, because I don't think it's 20. But it wasn't that long ago that somebody said, oh yeah, do you know? And the book, Crystal Lake Memories, when Peter Brackey called me, I had no idea. No idea whatsoever. And he took me to lunch and he was like, yeah, you, there's a whole world out there. And I said, really? So I was invited to Chiller and they said, just come show up. And I walk into that huge hotel, like ballrooms or whatever. And there's a sea of people, and everyone's in black. Everyone looks freaky to me. I had never seen anything like this, and I just like froze. And there was a fan that came over and said, "Are you okay?" And like, they all knew who I was. And I went like, "I don't know what to do." And they go, "Come over here. Come sit at a table. Let's give you a pen. And here's a box. Do you have pictures?" And I went, "No." And so they kind of set me up. This one fan did, and. And so I was, and it was Betsy Palmer was there that day, and Adrian King, and I said, "Hey Betsy, can I borrow a pen?" And she was like, "Okay." So, and then that night, I was so freaked out, I left. I couldn't even go back on Sunday. I was like, it just freaked me out. And then for the next couple times, I was still a little bit weird, and now I'm like, I get it now. But that was only like 10 years ago.
Is that because you're just so far removed from the horror community that you just had no idea that all this existed?
Well, and from acting.
Oh, true, yeah.
You know, just from the whole, you know, I had developed a whole other life. And I'm not a big horror fan, so like I didn't know what was going on.
Where's the other gentleman that had a question?
What was it like personally, like working with the Jason actor throughout the film?
Yeah, everyone loves those men that don't say one word.
No, I know. Everyone, the Jasons, it's so funny.
Oh my God. But anyway, yeah. So Warrington Gillette was the Jason with the mask, with all the appliances on. And he wanted to be an actor. So he showed up, and like his first couple days on the set, they put on all that makeup. Well, it's really claustrophobic. It's horrible. He had like dentures in, and he did not know that was going to be his gig. So after a couple days, he was whiny. I mean, and I get it. But he said, "This is a role for me," and I think the director said the same thing. And the stunt coordinator said, "Hey, I got this guy." Somebody had to fit into the clothes that they had, that jumpsuit or the overalls. And so he said, "Hey, I know this guy." So Steve Dash came up, drove up, and just kind of fit into the clothes. And Steve Dash likes to say that, you know, I was scared of him. I wouldn't talk to him because I was such a method actor. But you know, you're just trying to like stay alive. I mean that literally figuratively. But I had like all my friends, you know, we were all living at a camp, so I didn't hang out with Steve. He was like older than me, and you know, he just wasn't kind of in the group, so I didn't hang out with him. But he was fine, you know. He was actually really cool because he never said, "What's with that?" At least I didn't hear it. He never said, "What's with that dumb bitch? Like, she's missing all of her cues." I'm sure he did. Because look what I set him up pretty bad. Yeah, and I loved your Jason outfit too, which he made. Stand up,
yes, so definitely.
That everyone can
everybody
see.
See.
Look at that.
You get your picture.
And you just put on the mask. I mean, imagine like you had to sit for 5 hours, and then when lunch came, everyone's like chowing down, and you're like with a straw in your mouth, you know,
giving new meaning to liquid lunch.
Yeah.
I read that. If my research is correct, that you have children, or, do they follow in your footsteps with the acting, or are they doing their own thing?
Yeah, they will not go in with my whole acting thing. I think one of my daughters, I have a 29 and a 31 year old daughter. The 31 year old just saw April Fool's Day 2 years ago. They just don't get it. The 28-year-old came to one of the conventions, and she just freaked out like I did 10 years ago. And the other one wouldn't sit at my table because she was having so much fun. Oh, wow, I just met these people. But they do their own things. One works for the New York Times in the special sections. Place, and the other one is a social worker, basically working with kids in foster care. She works so hard, but yeah, so they work hard in different areas.
Does anybody else have a question for Amy?
Yeah,
do you have any funny stories of people that you've met at conventions that were a little above and beyond what you were expecting?
Well,
us?
You mean actors or
no,
us?
No. Or fans? That would come up maybe.
Debbie and Mia.
I do security for a lot of this, so I see a lot of strange things that you got to kind of.
Yeah.
A grain of salt.
Do you know what? I've never felt scared. You know, I really haven't. I mean, even when I was. As an actor, I never had a Harvey Weinstein incident. Well, I had one, but it was just laughable. It was stupid. James Toback, by the way. but it was just like, really? Okay, bye. So I've never, maybe people, you know, fans are scared of Jimmy, I don't know. But no, and sometimes people will just stand and talk and talk and talk and talk and talk. And have to kind of move them on. Sometimes people don't shower. Have to kind of move that on.
Oh, yeah.
But you know what? I've had a really good, I mean, I have not had moments of being fearful.
Do you have a convention that you've had like the most fun at or are they all like kind of like totally packed and you know
ScareCon. This is like you know what as Dave V called this one last night. That was such a nice VIP party. Because it wasn't really, really loud and people could talk, you know, and I saw a lot of you guys there. It was just so friendly. And maybe I'm getting old, I can't hear all that loud music, but he called it a boutique con. And I went, I kind of like it, and all the ceilings aren't really high, and it's not rooms and rooms. But I don't know. This one seems pretty good.
Yeah, it's a nice intimate little setting for everybody.
Yeah, yeah.
Does anybody else have a question they'd like to ask?
If they were gonna make another one, and one group, did you want to do that?
Yeah, totally. If it was a good role, and the money was gonna be decent. I'm not going to do it just to have them make money.
And kind of going along with that, I think I read somewhere that they, at one point, were thinking about bringing Ginny back for the third one.
Yeah, they were, and I got the script, and what an idiot I was, and I said no. Because I think what it was is that they were just going to pay me the same or something, and we tried to get more money. You know, I don't remember asking for like $100 billion. So they I think they said, let's just move on to somebody else. But the script was amazing. My mom found it in the attic and sent it to me, like, I'm going to say 6 years ago. And I really think it was six. Okay, maybe. But I read the script and I went, I can't believe I turned this down. What it was that Ginny had PTSD and she'd spent the summer learning karate or jiu-jitsu or something like that. She went to college and all of her people in the dorm were all like, that's that weird girl, that's that weird girl. And I kept saying, no, no, Jason's real, Jason's real. Oh, yeah, right, uh-huh, yeah. She dreamed all this, nothing ever happened. So I go down to my, my roommate said to me, hey, Ginny, can I borrow your car? Like, my car's broken. And I, yeah, here, I'm not going out tonight. She borrows my car. I go down Friday night, doing my laundry, of course. I go down to the basement of the dorm. I open up the dryer, the washer, and there is Paul's head. So if everybody wanted to know what happened to Paul, that's what happened to Paul. Paul's head was in there. Oh, my God. I call up Stu Charno, who was Ted. He came back in part three script. And I said, oh, my God, you can't believe what just happened. He goes, come on, he's out there. We're going to go find him. Next thing we know, the cops call and go, Ginny, are you alive? I go, what? Jason killed my roommate who borrowed my car. So Ted and I are out there on the hunt looking for Jason. I think it's only like 55 pages, so that's the only part I got of the script. But Ginny was like Linda Hamilton Terminator. How could I have turned that down?
Idiot. Would you have
sometimes you have regrets. That's one of them.
Would you have survived that one, or would you have gotten killed off in it?
Yes. Survive. Maybe I would. I don't know, because I don't really remember the end. I think I only had 50 pages.
Is there, while you were acting, was there any type of role you preferred over others? Do you prefer to do comedy, drama?
Yeah, well, how I figured out is that if I had to wear pantyhose, I was not into it. You know, back in the day, you guys probably don't know that, but a lot of people had to wear pantyhose, and it was gnarly, and high heels, and like, I didn't get those roles. So it was more about what the role was, as opposed to the genre.
Does anybody else have a question?
So when you're talking about, you know, those roles, those typical roles of pantyhose and high heels, but what got you into acting? Like, who were you, you know, fond of as a kid? What made you get your passion?
Well, Katharine Hepburn, but Jessica Lange. I was living in Florida, and a friend of mine was a model, and she said, hey, a modeling agency is going to come do an interview thing. You should go. And I said, I don't even know how to put makeup on. And she said, no, just come. So I went to this scout, and they said, hey, why don't you come up to New York? And I was like, all right, I'll go up to New York. And so I just started doing some print work, but I wasn't really tall. So I was cast as sort of a more girl outdoor, or whatever it's called. And then I started doing commercials, and then I started getting film. But when I was a kid, I was always in neighborhood theater groups. So it had been there, but then it stopped. And then I was back in the river, and that's where it took me. And one day I was like, oh my God, I'm going to work at Paramount Studios. Whoa, that's freaky. I would have never, even when you're a kid saying I want to be an actress, you don't necessarily go, oh, I think I'll go to work at Paramount Studios someday. So that's how it took off.
How you said you did the pantyhose roles. Were you sort of I don't know if she was a little bit before you or around the same time, but Sigourney Weaver sort of like that?
Yeah, she was a little bit, yeah. I was jealous of her deadline. okay, so you guys, I have to go get on a shuttle to the airport right now in 1 minute upstairs.
All right, thank you so much.
I just want to thank you guys so much.